I had to make. And therein lies my first mistake.
And welcome to Inside Baseball with Old Chestnut. I'm Liam Allen with my friend Morris Sachs. How you doing, MB?
It's great to see you, pal. It's
likewise,
great to see you.
Likewise, it's been a long time. It feels like it's been a month.
I suffered a bit from separation anxiety, to be honest with you.
But you were with your family, so like, don't say that on the air. You know, we don't need the family here. Okay.
How was your week?
It was great. Yeah, it was fun. It was exciting.
Yeah. We went up to Canada, Cheryl and I. We flew in on IVWAC 1, and we're met by the RCMP Honor Guard, playing both the Canadian and American National Anthem, as I was able to deplane without falling.
Okay.
That represented our country. And then we held a meet and greet where Cheryl and I gave out free coffee and donuts to Tim Hortons. It was well attended.
Good.
Yeah. I was a little bit disappointed. On Sunday, I woke up and it was 23 degrees. And I was rubbing my hands together waiting to get my free de-icing.
Sure.
But apparently, it wasn't necessary. So. Yeah. But it's been good. It's been good to be back. Mm-hmm. So, I figured we could spend the first half of the show talking about the sphere,
okay,
the Appreciate Sphere, and then for the back half, for the other listeners, we could talk about the difference between East Coast and West Coast mountain biking.
Perfect.
Are you in?
Yeah. I want to talk about Handler's boat, though.
Oh. Yeah.
Put that on the list for the end of the, for once we get through everything else.
Well, I, you know, why not? I mean, he brought it. He bought it from, and I'll never get the guy's name right, but Tillerson, one of his friends, clients who made a lot of money in restaurants, which is an amazing feat.
We have a grudge against him.
I'm sorry.
We have a personal grudge against
Yeah, that was we had a little altercation at one of his restaurants.
him. Just for the okay, so we know who we're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, same guy, same guy.
Let's do that later. Let's do the boat later. We'll do the boat later. We have more important issues to get to.
Waiting for the invite, but you never know. We've supported the Wolf Conservatory, and in many ways,
Likewise.
and we'll see, we'll see. But I have no issue. Rich has never sold a share of stock, and
But it's a boat. But it's a boat. It's a boat. Okay? That to me indicates terrible decision making. You can there's three things that you're supposed to rent, I think. Okay?
Well, if it flies, if it floats, or if it fucks, you're supposed to rent it,
Was
right?
told that. That was my understanding, okay?
Yeah. Well, I'm not a boat guy, so
Right. All my boat guys, okay, do nothing but complain about their boat.
Like the two happiest days in a boatman's life is the day he buys the boat and the day he sells it.
Right, exactly. What are we doing here? What are we
He
doing?
had a Cheryl had a similar experience with the aircraft. I mean, I think the day we bought it was the day before 9/11. And
Is it
yeah.
real? Are you
Oh
kidding?
yeah, and this is one of these examples of just total shit legal advice. We bought the plane on, I think, September 10th, something, 2011. And on September 11th, you know what happened, right?
Unbelievable. Your timing, man.
Well, but I called because the deal hadn't closed, and I called the lawyer and I said, this clearly is going to drop the value of the plane. Should I walk away from the deal? And he goes, well, he goes, you'll lose your deposit, which was, $100,000, which was material, but the price of the plane dropped by 50%. And looking back on that, it was just total shit legal advice. Like, if that happened to me today, I wouldn't even bother showing up for the closing.
Right,
I
right.
mean, but anyway, you got to find the right lawyer for the right job, and some of these guys is they try to play hard asses aren't that good at it. I do recall a Dickens play. I think it was called Bleak House.
Okay.
And in there's a lawsuit called Jarndyce versus Jarndyce, which goes on for so long that all of the money in question was depleted by the legal fees, which is having started to see some of these in my own experience. I've recently learned to cut bait on some of these things, which is
Imagine
pretty
that.
keeping in mind you have two young children, and I suspect our average age is a bit older than most. I don't know how accretive this will be, but you and I both publicly and privately for long periods of time have discussed how we think the devices are screwing up people's brains. And so I mentioned, I think, on the last podcast, I was spending less time in front of the screens. Do you recall that? Okay. So I did two things. I was dogmatic about not sitting in front of the screens, number one. And number two, I noticed how many text messages I was receiving. And I was getting something in the order of 30 text messages a day from 20 different people. And the combination of the two things, so I maintained my reluctance to get in front of the computer. For the people who texted me that I care about, I wrote them a note. I hope it was nice. I don't know how it was received, but I said, please, going forward, don't text me, email me, because I'm going to eliminate my texting. These devices are designed to benefit the owner of the device, not everybody else. And in my case, I find them unsettling. Even when you mute them, they vibrate or whatever. And so, what I noticed in the time that I've stopped looking at the computer so much, my reading has grown by leaps and bounds. In the last week, I've read 700 pages. I've read two books. Now, I didn't read 700 pages. I've got 2 degrees in accounting. I didn't read 700 pages between the two of them.
Of course not.
And I don't have the same underlying anxiety about what's next, what's next, what's next. And so to take it a step further, I'm doing away with the bulk of the texting. The logic being texting, if I remember the history right, wasn't called texting, it was SMS, short message signal or something like that, right? And what happens is, if a guy's running late for dinner, he'll send me a text and say, I'm 10 minutes late for dinner, I'm sorry. But if I get an article, it's not formatted right. I don't need to know about it right away. Right. So I think I've mentioned to you, my phone is turned off. And someone said, well, how can you go around with your phone turned off? I'm like, easy. If someone's got an emergency, okay, I'm not the guy to call. Don't get me wrong. If something bad happens to a member of my family, I want to know. But that 30 minutes between that bad thing happening and me being made aware of it, I'm not going to be the guy there to solve it. So what's the point? And I can't tell you how liberating it is to sit down and read a book for 45 minutes and start to learn some stuff and let my mind kind of start to, I actually think, start to heal itself a little bit. So we're going to continue on that approach. And if you do text me and you receive a note apologizing, asking to be emailed, please don't take it personally. If you text me and you don't get a note, I'm blocking you. And so this is just so there's no misunderstanding. Because it's all about me, and that's what we're going with.
I saw a thing this week that was like something like our brains get so much information in, let's just take a like one day in 24 hours, your brain gets hit with so much information than compared to 100 years ago. You got like you would get a week's worth of news in an hour on Monday morning compared to 100 years ago, where it would take a week for those things to happen, develop, get written about in the newspaper, get the newspaper to you, and for the information to spread. The immediacy and the fire hose of information and what you have to sift through and what matters is just voluminous and only getting more.
To augment or perhaps expound upon what you just said, one of my technology buddies had said to me, in the old days, if you wanted to communicate to somebody, you wrote a letter, you put it in an envelope, and you mailed it. And his view was, nowadays, nobody does that. At most, they write an email and they hit send. And I remember talking to my brother years ago. We were going back and forth about how to deal with a situation. And one of us said, you can always call a guy an asshole tomorrow, meaning, wait a day before you say something. But now, instead of going through the process of taking out a piece of stationery, thinking a note, handwriting it, and by the way, there's a difference between handwriting and typing in
100%.
terms of recollection, right? So you handwrite a note, you have to address it, you have to put a stamp on it. So all of a sudden, when you start thinking about blah, 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 well, maybe let me rethink that. Now what happens? It's fuck you, send. And that's not good. And so I'm trying as best as I can to get back on sides on these things. And thanks to Cheryl, there's another element of this. It's shades of gray, but she was pointing out how people use the phrase, it's interesting, and then goes on to tell you something that they think is interesting. She said, that's not the way to say it. The way to say it is, I found this interesting. Perhaps you might. To say it's interesting all of a sudden presupposes that you will, without giving you the option of deciding for yourself. So, to that end, we were having a conversation with some friends who moved out of the area. And we were talking, and everybody seems to assume that since I don't get a W-2 every year, I have nothing to do. So the question is, well, what do you do with your time? Well, lately I look at the markets. I have friends in the markets. We discuss things, but I've been spending more time trying to really dig down deep into the Middle East. And one of the two people in the conversation says, well, don't you think that's a gray area? And I said, no, couldn't be more black and white. Looked at me confused and then went on to say, well, it was pretty impressive how, 300 missiles were launched over Israel and they were all shot down. And I said, okay, explain to me how that's a gray area. And all of a sudden the conversation got awkward. And I said, let's just change the subject because, it sort of gets to this next thing I wanted to talk about. There's a book I came to, and I don't know how I found this book. I find books in peculiar ways. Either Cheryl recommends them, or I'll be reading about something else, and it'll reference a book, and the book will sound interesting to me. And so, generally, older books you can get for $3 or $4 or something like that. And one of these books that sound intriguing to me, maybe not to you,
Noted that,
but
yeah.
I would recommend this to our Iwok book club. Just behind Oprah Book Club, by the way, in the rankings. It's called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. And Cheryl described it to me as akin to Among the Thugs, which is a big fan favorite. I don't agree. I think it's in the same genre, but I think it's much deeper and really much more applicable to the situation now that's going on in the college campuses. And basically, and by the way, I'm not going to tell you I get this right, but I'd encourage you to read the book, especially because it's only like 120 pages. And if you read the first 50, you get 98% of it. But he talks about how these mass movements start. And generally, the people involved who get sucked into the movements have a shallowness or a narrowness in their life. They're lacking direction. They've had difficulty. They've had a different way of viewing the world than mainstream. And they find this symbol of something that they can get talked into, and all of a sudden they are a proponent of the narrative. And the most important part is you took a person who was lost, and now he's part of a group. Now, that group may be benevolent, but more likely than not, it's malevolent, because that's just how these things seem to go throughout history. I mention it now because we've all seen what's going on in the college campuses. One of the most painful things to me is two of my kids went to Northwestern, where there's a huge anti so-and-so protest going on. I did read, and of course, do your own research, a large percentage of the people arrested weren't students. They were outside agitators. And I think, well, I'm not, I kind of lost my enthusiasm for him, Scott Galloway, but he recently did a kind of a podcast that was recommended to me by one of our friends. And I think he does a pretty nice job of explaining, you know, what's going on with stuff. And I would encourage people to look at that and see what they can make of it. I mentioned this to you a number of years back. I was invited to hear Leon Panetta speak at the Core Club in Manhattan, which I foolishly got sucked into joining, paying up, getting in, and now I'm no longer a member because I never use it. But nonetheless,
What was his title then? What was his title? Just bring me back.
I don't, he at one point was Secretary of Defense,
Yeah.
he was in Congress.
Okay.
I don't, at that point, I think he was sort of minister without portfolio kind of thing. But he talked about a time where, you know, he, and I'm embarrassed to tell you, I don't know whether he was Republican or Democrat, but he talked about how in the old days, you know, they would have discussions with people from the opposite party, and they would try and come up with, moderate solutions. And with what's happened, and there's plenty of blame to go around, so I won't pick on anybody. But now it's either my way or the highway. And you know, that's not helping with the polarization of the country.
It's destroying the fabric of the country. It's become so polarizing, so blue versus red, so divided. Yeah, it's completely impossible for any sort of bipartisan work to happen. Yeah, it's depressing, quite frankly. Leon Panetta, head of the CIA. Okay, he ran the CIA. Yeah, member of the House of Representatives, Management and Budget Committee, White House Chief of Staff for Bill Clinton, third director of the CIA, and then the Secretary of Defense under Obama. And he's still alive? Jiminy Crickets. 30 years, born in 38, he's still going. Yeah, old school politician.
Yeah. Well, it was
Yes.
brought to my attention on a slightly different matter. We've taken the heat off of the 69-year-old Kathy Wood and her performance. Just to put it in perspective, she's 69. I'm 63. Okay. Now, my days are full keeping track of my little family office here.
Yeah.
You take on the public appearances she's done. Now, I know that the stop at Tim Hortons was a bit distracting, but there's been a lot of pressure from management to increase the ratings. There's even talk of opening up an Asia office. I don't know who we're going to get to fill that slot, but we'll worry about that later. We received a nice note from one of the listeners asking about the municipal ETFs.
Yes.
And I'm not going to read the question because I think there was a little bit of a misunderstanding why I don't like them. I think the question involved reinvestment of proceeds to earn the yield. That's not, while that may or may not be true, the reason I don't like ETFs in general and municipal ETFs in particular is the municipal bond market is not terribly large. I wouldn't say information is hard to come by. I mean, anyone can get the prospectuses, but you have to be willing to read them. And not everyone is given the same set of gifts to determine whether an individual municipal bond is good or not. The problem with the ETF structure, and I guess I'll hurt some feelings when I say this, but I don't think any of these bond fund ETFs get the sharpest tools in the shed. Okay. It's just, if I hurt your feelings, admit that you wouldn't rather be trading at a hedge fund. And if you decide I'm wrong, then my sincerest apologies. But I don't think that's how it works. But the problem for me with the ETF is structural. And it's not that complicated. Okay. The way the process works is people put money in, and the investor of the fund, the manager of the fund, he's got to go out and buy municipal bonds. Okay. Well, as you've seen through some CCs of the way it works, getting a rare glimpse behind the curtain between me and the experts in the municipal bond market.
Trench coat guys.
These things take a while, and the municipal bond guy, he doesn't have the latitude, so he gets 100 million in. He's got some number of days to put it to work. But if in those number of days there's nothing but shit to buy, that's what's going in the book. That's number one. Number two, and I'm willing to be off on this, but I think I'm closer than not. There is overt leverage allowed in these things and covert leverage allowed in these things. The overt, as it says, we can borrow a third against the holdings. And the covert is, I discovered in one of these other ETF type structures, guys were actually able to go do swaps and increase their exposure, which is a form of leverage. And as my pal Eiji and I discovered, must be 20 years ago, in a huge bull market where you have a steepening rally, okay, you want to be all in these things because they're levered. Everyone's coming for them. All the bonds are going up. It's a great thing. However, when these things turn south and people start asking for redemptions, what happens is this: the manager looks and he's got 100 million worth of redemptions. Okay, well, he's going to go sell $100 million worth of munis, and he is price inelastic. That's why when we get into bear markets, that's where opportunities for guys like us have ability to, gather up very quickly, take a quick study of the underlying security, and put together a bid for a block. Because these guys don't come out and sell 5 million or something, no. They'll sell 25s and 50s, which in the treasury market is nothing. But in the muni market, it's the whole shooting match, right? So that's why I don't like the ETF product, because it's, again, asymmetrical. I don't think the fees are necessarily absurd, but I think the dynamic is really bad. So I had mentioned I wanted to go back to talk to Cathie Wood, talk about Cathie Wood a little bit, because when I was a risk manager at Greenwich Capital, we had a very specific compensation plan. And for better or worse, I got paid last. And in years, we made a lot of money. It was spectacular. And in years where it was marginal, it wasn't spectacular because everyone else got paid fully, and I may not have. I don't remember the year or specific details, but everyone seemed to be pretty happy with it because, with one exception, nobody ever quit. And that's the litmus test in the business, right? So early in the year, as a risk manager, I would be anxious because until traders got up money, they were ostensibly trading my capital. And by mid-year, they were up enough money, like all of a sudden the pressure's off, and now we can go after a little bit. But there was always the one or two people, and I say people, but I don't think I ever had any women trading for me, but I'll say people because that's how things roll now. They would be getting close to their stop or their limit. And that, to me, was a very dangerous situation, because under pressure, people do irrational things. And so a guy that all of a sudden was up a bunch of money, now he's even on the year and it's August, he's starting to think, well, if I can make 10 million, I'm going to get paid something. If I lose 10 million, but anywhere in between that, it schnitz, which means there was much more incentive for them to fuck around on the market. And I don't know what the number is. I'm sure it'll be open for debate, but I suspect her trading back and forth of her position has cost billions of dollars. I imagine talented people like Kevin Muir or Lynn Alden, or the blind squirrel, the blind squirrel, right?
Correct.
I don't want to mention Simply Red because that's more marketing than sales, but I suspect when you look at the money she's lost trading the book, this is the point I'm trying to make, that that's panic. And I think anyone who has money with her is a fool. Not day one. I mean, look, she was the new thing, and
She had a good run. She had a good run for 2 years, 3 years.
Well, to this day, she's had a good run. I Googled her net worth. It's about $200 million. That's pretty good for being an abject failure,
Not bad. Pay me 200.
right? I mean, what grade would you give her?
Five. I mean, the fund is up like 100% since inception, so I'm not going to, I have nothing to say.
I have notes on that. I cry bullshit.
Since inception, since zero. They started at zero and it's at like
But
90
okay, so well, yes.
now. Yes, but it's
Yeah.
all gone, but it went up and down. That's yeah, yes.
Well, it went up and down. It doesn't account for the income taxes. That's not, I can't believe that's an internal, right? You see what I'm getting at,
I've
right?
said it. Yeah, that's their, but that's their answer. That's the answer. That was their line. We won't comment. When I called for a comment, that was the comment. It was the
Yeah.
phone call.
Okay, so my comment is this. That's bullshit.
I agree.
That is the furthest thing from the truth we've talked about on this podcast.
Tell it to the guy that bought a block at 120 and it's sitting at 29 now. Yeah, so it's comical. I know. I know.
Yeah. Well,
Wheels are off that bus, dude. I like at this point, I almost feel bad for her. But how come she doesn't?
you can't feel bad for someone that has 500 or $200 million. Did they get hit by a bus? Then you can feel bad. I don't care. Stupid.
She's just been dragged. I mean, it is just bad for her.
I wrote a note to one of our friends regaling her failure because he was always a big fan. And he comes back to me and says, well, lost, she got distracted. I'm like, no, she's a dope.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
So, and meanwhile, according to the internet, which I've been avoiding, she has 25% of her money in Bitcoin. I don't know what the fund's position is, but
Going to a million. It's going to a million, according to her. That's okay. So,
I don't know. I don't know. I had received an early morning missive from our friend across the pond, Anthony Peters, wishing me to mention hello to you. So consider that ticked off. And he did compliment us on our moving to treasury bills ahead of the not used accurately, but I'll call the denouement of the bond market.
you're at 5%. Did we get 5% on Friday? Are we up? Did we hit the magic five yet?
On 3 month bills?
On two years.
Oh yeah. 5.000 bid offered at 4.993.
Look at that. Look at
Yeah.
what's
Yeah.
your 3 month at?
The 3 month bill. I'm going to give it to you in bond equivalent yield, and it looks like a 5.393.
Okay.
Yeah.
The 10-year languishing at 4.6.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I'm very content to sit and wait. I will tell you this, that old schoolers like life coach Leslie Harris and I, we talk about the feel of the market. And I think he and I, oh, I'll speak for myself, but I think he's in agreement. Just something just doesn't feel right. And one of the ways you stay alive in this business is by getting out of the market when you're not comfortable. And I was thinking about history the other day, and I sent you the biography of this lady named Ina Drew, who I remember, and I think I've told this story before, but for me, it was very important to get out of the business before I embarrassed myself. And by that, I mean losing a lot of money. I'm sure I said plenty of stupid things and embarrassed myself, but in the end, I don't care about that. But I was in Bortolucci, Italy, with Ingamba cycling tours with my good friend Joao. And if you're ever looking to go bike riding in Italy, which I highly recommend, this is, it's like you're a pro. They got fresh, clean bike every day, snacks, great food. But I'm sitting in Borgarlecki where the internet is awful. And two people who were part of the adjunct crew, who were the, people who always show up around your house for dinner time, looking for a free meal. Well, they were quoted photographers, yada, yada, yada. But I found them incredibly rude, but they would suck up the internet. Once in a while, it's like, hey, look, we're paying guests. Get the fuck off the internet. And that didn't go very well, as you can imagine. But so I went old school and I got a copy of the New York Times. And in there was an article about how this Ina Drew kind of blew up. Now, it was a long and involved story, and the details to this day are somewhat sketchy. But that was a name to me that I thought was sort of gilt edge. And sitting in that old medieval town, I realized, at best, you're as good as this woman, and maybe not even as good as this woman. And if they got her, it's just a matter of time till they get you. And that's kind of the seminal moment where I decided, when I find a way to get out, I'm getting out, and I'm glad I did. I think clearly, well, not clearly, but I assume had I stuck around, I would have made a lot more money. But again, I think this is from life coach Leslie Harris. He told me a story, and this is spectacular. And a lot of people are going to scoff at this, so fuck you. But apparently, Kurt Vonnegut went with a friend to a party, and the friend said to Kurt, this party costs more than you made on your bestseller. And Kurt Vonnegut said, well, I have something he'll never had. And Vonnegut said, what's that? And the guy said, enough. And I fully get it when you're your 30s or 40s, building a career, trying to save a nest egg. That's not really great comfort to you. But first of all, I know what it's like now when you start to understand what matters. And the bulk of what matters is not a lot of money. Secondly, and you can look this name up if you like, the fellow who ran the government bond desk at Salomon Brothers at the heyday, at the pinnacle of the government bond market, his name was E. Craig Coates. And because of where I worked, I mentioned I was fortunate enough to work at a prestigious, I met him. And as was my habit back when I was young, trying to meet people, I would go out to dinner. And there was a really good steak place on the Upper East Side. I'm sure it's closed. It was called the Manhattan Cafe. And so I rolled in there looking for some broker to buy me dinner because, of course, I was broke. And he was at the bar. And I went up and reintroduced myself because we'd only spoken on the phone. And they were talking about something and asked me how it was going. I go, yeah, I'm working hard, but it's like houses are a lot of money, and I kind of wondering how I'm gonna get something built. And he looked at me, he says, Morris, listen, you're a talented kid, keep at it. It's all gonna come right. And at the moment I'm thinking, great, right? But it's true. And I'm not gonna say that's gonna happen for everyone. And in fact, I think that my generation, maybe plus or minus 10 years, has fucked things up pretty good so that the next generation doesn't have the same chance for advancement that we do. But I think the nature of things is they swing one way too far and to another. But did you ever see, I'm sure I recommended it to you, this movie Dumb Money?
No, you asked me last week. I haven't watched it yet. I can't watch it with the kids. Unless I can watch it with the kids, it doesn't go on the TV. Okay, I had to watch Fish Shit Night. I don't have. I'm sorry. I'll watch Dumb Money. I'll watch it.
Okay. I don't want to disrupt the
Shut up, kids! I'm watching this movie. Go to bed. Like doing my homework. I'm gonna watch this for the show. What are you watching, sweetheart? Dumb Money, more.
I've watched that movie 3 times, and it really resonated with me in so many ways. So instead of boring the audience with talking about it twice, when you deign to get around to
Yeah, I'll get to it.
doing it, are you waiting for the free copy? Is that
No.
because we get all those before the Academy Awards? They like to know what we think. I don't know. I felt that was a pretty good movie. The long and the short of it is, they're making the point that the individual guy doesn't have a chance. And I think that's true. I would give one example that I've seen twice now, why I don't like other people managing money, why I don't like these ETFs. So in 2 separate occasions, one was an individual, an older gentleman who's acted as a mentor to me over the years. And the other is a friend who's turned into a philanthropist and is involved in helping philanthropies with their finances, both in portfolio review and audit. And since I have experience in both, they sought out my counsel. In both cases, the individual and the charitable situation, I got a listing of their portfolio, which is I took that as quite an honor because that's full open kimono, right? That's what you got, and you're showing it to someone based on your belief that they're honest, and so I felt really good about it. But I noticed the same thing in 2 accounts. So they had wealth brokers that had suggested if they had money sitting in cash, since they lived in, well, the guy lived in New York, the philanthropy didn't, but the result is pretty much the same thing. Money that was cash got swept into municipal bond funds. Municipal money market funds.
Okay.
Okay. But what these two people and probably the portfolio manager didn't understand was this. They were buying long-term securities, but the coupon reset weekly. So to the untrained eye, you know, every week, whatever the 3-month bill or whatever the 90 or 30-day bill was, you got a spread to that, and that was tax exempt. And that's how some of these funds get their leverage. They loan the securities. But as I explained to these two individuals, even though the coupon resets, it doesn't mature for like 30 years. So you may not have 30 years of interest rate exposure, but you have 30 years of credit risk.
Wow.
And these people were just gobsmacked when I told them about it. And that's just one of many examples I can give you. So if you recall, I referred earlier to One of the listeners had asked about the ETFs and why I didn't like them. And his concern about going and buying municipal bonds, because I guess you can go to Schwab or whatever, and I haven't done this, but I know a couple of people have. They'll have odd lots of, 25,000 or 50,000, whatever it is, or smaller, I don't know. But the couple things about municipal bonds are, my understanding is they have a very, very low historical default rate. Meaning, if you buy 10 of them, the chance that they're all going to go bad is pretty low. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that, but I'm just using these examples. And certainly, if you can buy them on a Schwab type platform or whatever, they must make access to you the prospectus for the securities. And so, as I've done with every municipal bond I've probably ever bought, I got the prospectus and I read it. And it's dull reading. That phrase MIGO, my eyes glaze over. Okay. Well, when you look and you see it's a bond backed by the Texas Education Society. Well, you're going to realize after you look at a lot of these things that that's a very good credit. If you find a bond that's backed by some, solar powered, thing with people who don't have much experience, that's probably not such a great play. And there's all shapes and sizes in between. And if you buy them and you hold them to maturity, you don't have the bid offer spread. Well, you have the coupon reinvestment risk, but everybody does. And until Anthony and I started talking about it a while ago, it didn't really show up on many people's radar. So I urge caution with munis, but I think they're a valuable tool, especially as I suspect taxes will be going up, and we'll see, huh?
Yeah, I heard the guy on Bloomberg, the guy from Franklin Templeton was on Bloomberg on Monday morning, 9 a.m. in the 9 o'clock slot, saying muni bonds look real attractive right now.
Yeah, he said that, and then we went looking, and they didn't. It attracted the sell. I think my quote on that was, I'm a better seller.
Right, yeah, exactly. You say I first you said I don't see any. Like I'm not where I'm looking, you know.
Yeah. It's easy. When you don't have skin in the game, it's easy to say all sorts of things. So,
Can you talk to me about the Japanese yen? Checking is does that say one? What's the yen at? Holy crow, 160? Is that a
yeah.
problem? Do I have to pay attention to that?
Well, so to shamelessly plug Kevin Muir, who
Nice.
I think is a terrific kid, and one of the very few newsletters I think is worthwhile, mostly because it's value for money. I don't remember it being very expensive. He made some allusion to the yen affecting GDP. Through the fact of, cash flows back and forth. I got to be honest with you. I leave the foreign exchange stuff to others. I just, as I get older, or as I've gotten old, I've really concluded not only do I know what I know, more importantly, I know what I don't know. And, which is happening with great rapidity. I've had some real estate situations recently where I just, you think you know something, and it just doesn't turn out that way. But I don't have a lot of value. I mean, I remember when it was like 300 to the dollar, right?
Okay. All
But
right.
I know the guy who likes to listen to our podcast covertly put out a note about what percentage of Americans have passports, and I think the long and the short of it is the dollar's gotten expensive enough that's starting to pay to travel to places. I think his aspersion was you've got this mass migration, but I mean, I was having this discussion with Cheryl, and as is common wisdom, at this time of Passover, when we talk about being slaves, which apparently now they say we weren't, and we left Egypt, and now they say we didn't leave Egypt. I wasn't there. The fact is, over history, we've been the chosen people to get picked on, and so we've kind of wondered where would we go in the case of some bizarre turn of events, and the answer is we have nowhere to go. I mean, we have two daughters in Manhattan. I suppose we could go up to Canada. I don't like the healthcare system there. I'm getting older. I'll need that more and more. As much as I'd like to claim I'm a student of agriculture, having taken multiple ag econ classes, I don't want to make my living running the,
Off-grid homestead. Yeah, I don't see that working out for you.
No, I'm not meant for hard manual labor. In fact, if I can get my act together today, I'm going to walk upstairs and spin on the trainer for 30 minutes.
You know, walking upstairs and spinning, okay? So as we're up against the commercial break here, up the stairs and spinning, okay? Up the stairs and spinning in Vegas, okay? I am thrilled that I did not attend the Sphere, okay? I would not have been able to handle that, okay?
I we need to take a minute and discuss this. I'm sorry. If you're not a fish fan, have a
Go.
nice week.
Later.
So I downstreamed each of those. Okay. Now, I tried to be open-minded. It's not my nature. But I found separately the light show to be spectacular.
Yes.
I downloaded the high def files and have been doing my homework, and I think the acoustics on the download were spectacular.
Okay.
I think the combination of the music and the cavernous nature of the sound in the room, plus the light show being so dramatic, I personally don't have enough bandwidth to take it all in at the same time.
Yeah.
And so maybe for the youngsters whose brain has been ruined by all this internet stuff, it was great. And I'm a little disappointed, but I've come to agree with a number of my colleagues in the fish sphere that Madison Square Garden remains the supreme place to see fish, and that is now beyond reproach.
Wow.
What's your take?
I haven't watched the whole show, but it's incredible. It's just like to me, it's overstimulating. I don't know. Like I have enough problems focusing on the four band members and Kuroda's light show. Now I've got to watch a moving tapestry, and it was an incredible video display. It's the closest you can come. I've never taken acid, okay, but I assume that that's what taking acid is, that visual like having your mind blown. Like everyone that I talked to was like mind blowing, you know? And like the art on the sphere inside the
Yeah. Oh,
astounding.
yeah.
I haven't been, first of all, it's, I got screwed. It started, show started at 11. All right. So that killed it for me. I'm not watching a 3 hour set starting at 11 p.m. So I didn't watch it. I watched it the next morning and I would watch like clips of it. And it's hard to put it together watching it in the daytime at home with two kids running around. Like, I couldn't grasp it. But when I, the clips that I saw of it, dude, it was, extravagant. Like I felt like I would be sitting in the chair in the theater, like hugging the chair to try to process it all and not, and it was wild. Yeah.
I saw a picture of that room. Okay. Now, keep in mind, I'm a claudicant 63-year-old, but I am a modestly accomplished rock climber and mountaineer, thanks to Alpine Endeavors, the official climbing resource of IBWOC. I don't think I could have made it down the stairs.
I know. I know. It was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
So, well, we'll see. There's the summer run.
don't know. Dude, they got a lot of publicity. Everyone knows about fish now, dude. They made CBS. It's been they've really entered the mainstream. Did you see the Drew Carey? Did you see Drew Carey's review of the, oh, Drew Carey, who's like one of the legendary comedians of all time. A legendary comedian, Drew Carey.
The Price is Right guy?
Yeah, well, he did Whose Line Is It Anyway? He's a comic genius. Okay, Drew Carey.
Because The Price is Right is the stepping stone for great comedians.
Exactly. Dude, he filled Bob well. Dude, he did he you should try to find the clip about him going to fish. I had no idea he was a fish guy. He comes out and does like a 2 minute, he went to the Sphere and talked about how it was like I'll post the review, but it was incredible. Yeah,
Okay.
his review of the Sphere was historic. And yeah, they've gone mainstream. They CBS, a lot of people picked up on it. A lot of people were like, oh, Fish. Oh, there's this band Fish that's playing the Sphere. And a lot of people like them. I was like, okay, well, our audience knows exactly who this band is. Yeah. Late to the party. Late to the party, folks. So yeah,
There you go.
Dr. Schlock, we need, I know it's the weekend and we didn't do a show for 2 weeks, but like 48% of Americans have passports. That's what we're going to come up with this week. All right. So how about this? Mortgage rates, all-time new high, Doc Schlock. Monday morning, I want a 7.3 mortgage rate assessment. And tell me where that's going to go. I need Apollo's take on that. Because this morning, many more private firms in Europe that, like, come on, Doc, what are we doing here? That's what we came up with. Many more private firms in Europe. You're putting your name on that on the Apollo note? Come on.
Well, I'm coming to market in the real estate business for two things. One is a commercial real estate loan, which we put out a bid packet on. And I told you we're trying to sell an office building.
360 Bowery.
Yeah. And so we have an offer.
Was quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, good product sells itself.
It on the show just like your pepper spray.
360 Bowery. Liam and I will come entertain you.
Imagine that.
No, I would be delighted to sell it. It's I mean that's the point.
Yeah.
But anyway, long-winded to get around to saying I'll be able to report back in the next week with boots on the ground, which is a whole lot better than Doc Schlock stealing something from Ivy Zelman, who's the greatest real estate analyst in the world, or at least was when I used to look at those things. So, I don't know. We gonna ever have some good weather here?
No. We're gonna go right to 85 degrees tomorrow. It's gonna be summer tomorrow. You're done with 45, and it's gonna go directly to summer, and you're gonna be complaining it's too hot pretty soon. So,
Perfect.
welcome home. Welcome home. Welcome to the suck. Okay. Oh,
Right, bud. Well, it's good to see you.
likewise. What do we got next week? Are we doing the show next week? We got
Heck
not.
yeah.
Okay, good. All right, guys. Well,
Yeah, maybe let's go down to Columbia University and interview the they're working on a two-campus solution.
I thought they closed. I thought they sent them home.
I don't
Imagine
know.
you went to Columbia. Imagine you went to Columbia. Imagine you're a poor kid that got into Columbia. Poor kid. Imagine you got into Columbia. You just want to go get your Ivy League degree and go home, and now they blew up your campus protesting Hamas or protesting Israel. Who knows? Dude, college kids, dude, good luck out there. You guys are gonna you can you feel safe on your little Columbia campus protest? Go try that shit like out in the real world. Like it's not gonna it.
That was one of the things the guy was talking about with the podcast. But do you remember the NYU professor?
Yeah, Scott Galloway.
He said, imagine if the gaze for Palestine dropped off in Gaza. How would that work?
Clowns, dude. They're clowns.
Here's a little bit. Here's a business. I'll take this to Shark Tank, see what they think. So we raise $1 million, okay? We get 20 of these gays for Palestine. We buy life insurance all on all of them, and then we give them a free one-way ticket to Gaza. You
Some
think
dollars,
SEC would approve that one?
dollars, dude. They've approved other nonsense. Jesus,
Well,
yeah.
Gary Gensler wouldn't get around to reading
Who?
it. I think that's a good place to end.
Why? Thank you.
Here.
Good. Oh, how do I do this? All right, folks. Inside Baseball with Old Chestnut at gmail.com.